Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
No.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Call in right now if you want to be on the show, 406-294-0970. We've got a guest lined up for the next segment. And then the segment after that, we're going to have Aaron Flint calling in live from Washington, D.C. to give us an update from on the ground in D.C. So now's your chance to get on here, at least until maybe the second half of the 9 o'clock hour. We'll have open phones again. We've been talking about a number of stories here out of Montana. Of course, one of them, a big story on the KBZK website, was about Park County and Livingston. The commissioners there putting out an isolation and quarantine plan and authorizing the sheriff there and directing the sheriff to arrest Montanans who disobey any of the Park County issues there. And it looks like we may have a caller on the line. I'm ready to go to him sort of whenever we're ready to go to him. We'll go to him, talk about that issue. You've been talking about the Senator Ellsworth issue. And so we're going to go straight into the phones. We've got Glenn in Livingston. Glenn, can you give us an update on what is going on with the Park County quarantine isolation pandemic having the sheriff arrest people issue?
You can't make this stuff up. It's just amazing. The Department of Health has putting together a plan for future pandemics, quarantining protocols, law enforcement participation if people don't cooperate, and a whole bunch of things in that realm. People here are very concerned. We saw what happened with COVID. Some people, including me, are dubious of the whole quarantine thing and believe that this is great, you know, this is incredible overreach on the part of the county. It's my understanding that our legislature passed laws limiting emergency, procedures like this without their approval. And Governor Gianforte signed that bill, actually forfeiting some of his power as the governor. And I have to wonder if we already have a program and a protocol statewide, why the county should be allowed to really tighten this up. I've looked at some of the documents. I'm not the best read on all the details, but it includes things on authorization to arrest or detain or bring in and put people, take away their freedom, essentially.
So who are these Park County commissioners? I mean, do you guys have like three Democrats on the Park County Commission or who are these folks?
Well, they're not Democrats. Well, it's a nonpartisan, right? We all know what that means. But two of the commissioners lean conservative and are good folks. There's a new commissioner, and I haven't met her yet. She, I think, is believed to lean.
Well, hey, quick, we got 10 seconds left. What's kind of going forward? What's the issue? What's going to happen?
Well, the commissioners are getting an earful, and people showed up for a meeting and they were surprised at how many people showed up. There's going to be a lot of people who show up on Wednesday night.
Good, good.
Serving the great state of Montana, from the peaks of the Beartooths to the banks of the Clark Fork River, Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Your favorite guest host, David Noble, filling in here live on Inauguration Day. That's Noble with a K. I'm an attorney in Billings. I'm also an online political commentator on Twitch and YouTube and X at LectureFan, LCTRFAN. We've got some special guests here. We've got attorney and former legislator Matt Monforton and his clients, Todd and Krista Kolstad. Are all three of you there on the same line?
Good morning. We sure are, David. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, welcome to the show. If I recall correctly, when when your guys' story first broke about this, if I recall, CPS sort of taking the children and then pushing transgender theory, Montana Talks was maybe one of the first interviews publicly, Todd and Chris, you guys were able to do. And then I don't know when Matt Monfort and you guys got involved, but I guess kind of take it away from here and kind of tell us what's going on and with the situation and then what bill's being heard today and kind of go from there.
Well, thank you, David. We are here in the Capitol. We're here to testify in support of SB 50, which would require CPS to get a warrant before they seize your children. If SB 50 had been in effect in August of 2023, the Kolstads would not have been going through the hell that they've been going through with the state ever since then. I'm going to turn it over to the Kolstads. They're going to give you a quick recap of what they've been through.
Hi. So I don't remember, I don't know if you remember our story or not, but our story started in August of 2023 when our 14-year-old daughter had made a comment to somebody that she had wanted to take her own life. And this other child called the Glasgow Police Department. And the police department in turn called myself and said, you know, how do you feel? Do you feel like your daughter's in danger? And we had said no, that she's having some behavior problems. And that I didn't feel she was in danger, but if she was, I would certainly take her to the hospital. Well, fast forward, this happened at 1:48 in the afternoon. Fast forward to 7:40 that night, and a CPS worker shows up at our house because the police officer stated he could not lay physical eyes on the child, nor could he speak to her directly, even though he did not ask to do that. So this worker says she wants to have a tour of our house. She wants to make sure our daughter, and we refer to our daughter as Jennifer, even though that's not her real name. She wanted to make sure that our daughter was okay. So we let her in. I gave her a tour of the home. She asked to speak to Jennifer alone for a few minutes, and I did allow it. But after a few minutes, I was kind of uncomfortable because we had never been in this situation before. We had never dealt with CPS or had any kind of things going on in our home. And so at that point, I went outside, and the CPS worker informed me that Jennifer had said she had taken 30 ibuprofen and drank a glass of toilet bowl cleaner at about 3 p.m. that afternoon. So we agreed that we would take her to the hospital for psychiatric evaluation. And it should be noted also that at that point, blood work was taken when she got to the hospital, and she did not have any ibuprofen in her system, nor did she have toilet bowl cleaner or any of that. She showed no signs of illness or distress that you would think you would see. And so the hospital admits her for psychiatric care, which we were fine with. And then the whole ball just started rolling from there. So we constantly had to fight with the hospital because they were doing things like socially transitioning her, even though we asked them not to. There was an aide that sat outside of her door that talked about having top surgery and being non-binary. But there was another aide that attacked us in a restaurant in town in Glasgow and yelled at us in this restaurant and told us that we knew our daughter wanted to be a boy and we'd made the wrong choice. And the whole time, CPS was involved with our care. So at this point, CPS says they can't leave her care because she's saying she wants to kill herself. And we agreed that our daughter needed to go to psychiatric evaluation and be admitted into an inpatient facility. So on the night of August 22nd, apparently the hospital was informed by two different hospitals that there were possible beds available, and nobody informed us. CPS didn't inform my husband and I, and neither did the doctor. So there was a bed available at Chaudière, and we were not told of that. There was also a bed available in South Dakota. We were not told of that. Instead, our daughter was taken to, or we were called and said a bed had opened up in Wyoming. And because Wyoming allowed transgender care without parental consent, my husband and I said we didn't want her to leave the state. We were not okay with that. We didn't understand what our rights were. Who could answer our questions? We had several questions. And at that point, the CPS worker showed up about 10 minutes later and removed Jennifer from our care, stating that we were unable or unwilling to provide medical care for her, which is not true. Jennifer was in the hospital. She was under 24-hour evaluation. She was with staff all the time. She was not in any danger. So our point is, if this bill had been in place, they would have had to require a warrant to remove her from our care.
And yeah, that just seems like
time it would have taken,
Chris, if you don't mind me jumping in, because we only got about a minute and a half left here. Because I support the a warrant requirement. Maybe, I mean, if you guys know, jump in. But maybe a question for Matt. I mean, why is there not already a warrant requirement before taking your? And is there what's the pushback on the bill? I mean, I think it makes common sense. Of course, you should have to get a judge's approval before you take somebody's kids. What would be the issue? Anybody would oppose that?
It's not only common sense, David. It's a matter of constitutional law. The federal constitution, the Fourth Amendment, as well as the due process clause of the 14th Amendment, requires a warrant before the government can seize your kids. It is absolutely outrageous that Montana doesn't have that kind of statute. We're the only state in the country that doesn't. And HB 37, which passed the legislature overwhelmingly 2 years ago, would have put that requirement into state law. It was vetoed by the governor. And if you look at his veto message, it's riddled with false misinformation.
Okay,
and
we're
hoping that people show up to
today.
Go ahead.
The hearing's today. I got to throw it. We're up against the break, but the hearing is today.
Taking your calls live, 406-294-0970. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
David Noble filling in for Aaron Flint, who is in Washington, D.C. right now. We've got Dominique in Billings on the line. We're going to get to you, Dominique in Billings, here shortly. Aaron Flint will be calling in shortly as well. But right now we're talking to Matt Monfort and Krista Kohlstadt and Todd Kohlstadt. I wanted to give you three kind of another chance here to, I guess, let everybody know kind of what time is the hearing today and I guess what your ask is for the listeners out there.
Well, thank you, David. The hearing is in Senate Public Health and Human Services. That's in room 317 in the Capitol. It starts at 3 o'clock. We are doing a prayer rally before that at 2:30 in room 350 at the Capitol. So come if you can to the third floor of the state Capitol today at 2:30. Join us for our prayer rally, and then join us, stand with the Kohlstadts, stand in support of SB 50, and let's not let any other Montana family go through what these people have gone through.
And are you going to be doing updates on your Facebook regarding this bill and some of the other stuff going on in the legislature? And if so, are you okay with folks kind of trying to follow your Facebook page to kind of keep up to date?
Oh, absolutely. We'll keep this. We'll keep up on Facebook. And as you probably know, David, there is a pending federal civil rights lawsuit that the Kohlstadts have filed, and we will try to keep people informed on that as much as possible as well.
Awesome. Well, that sounds great. I know I'm following your page looking for those updates as well. Dominique in Billings, you've been hanging on the lines a long time. Dominique, thanks so much for being with us.
That's fine. That's okay. Never called before, but it's kind of weird that you had them couple on. I actually went through something like that down in Florida when I was with my former wife, who was now dead, unfortunately.
I'm sorry to hear that.
She was very mentally ill, and I got involved with HRS. Oh, God. You want to talk about people that have power. Holy crap, I didn't realize what I had gone through, but I didn't get to the point where they took my son away. Luckily, being an Arik in Philadelphia and in Pennsylvania, I came at them, you know, full blast and wound up having them exit out of my life. So I can feel for what they're going through. I'm sorry.
No, I get it. I mean, it's obviously one of the toughest.
You think that what they can do, how a government agency can have power over your child, and it is scary. I hope that this law passed and people don't have to go through crap like this. But I was wondering, do you have a monitor that you're watching the inauguration? Because I've been flicking around, and it's amazing that the fake news, the media, whatever, the legacy media, you know, they're starting their rhetoric already. You know, they're picking apart his Trump's policies, what he wants to do, and so on. And yet I'm watching I go from my streaming stations back to those stations, back to my streaming stations, and I'm watching News Network and Fox. You know, they're not political at all. They're showing the people. They're talking about who's who, you know, this and that, what Trump wants to do, his cabinet members, what their strengths are, why they were picked, and this and that. I just want to get your point, because I know that people in this country are fed up with the media news. They really are. The legacy media is dead in my eyes. I don't even watch it. I told your screen caller, I only watch the news for the weather. And as soon as the weather's over, I go back to MASH. I don't even watch the local news, because even they're biased.
And even the weather
is biased, but you can't.
I mean, right? With all the global warming stuff? No, you're absolutely right. I mean, in the media coverage of the inauguration has been, I mean, honestly, okay, Dominic, I was almost expecting the media to learn a lesson for once from these election results. I mean, the fact that the media is still today, and I do watch the mainstream media. I do read them. In fact, I've got a whole bunch of mainstream media articles printed out right in front of me, and I've got little highlights on all their little lies and all their little misrepresentations. And I do think it's so important to do that. You know, Rush Limbaugh had been pointing out how biased and how fraudulent the media is, you know, since the 90s. And so you hear sometimes people will say, oh, you know, everybody already knows that. Why do you keep? No, folks, people don't know it. You still got a lot of good people in this country who still trust the media. But no, I mean, I honestly am a little bit surprised. Even I'm a little bit surprised to see the media not changing a thing. I mean, when they see their polling, the percentage of the public that trusts the mainstream media is in the toilet. Their viewership and readership is in the toilet. They just got absolutely decimated in the election results. And yet they're still pushing the same stuff. They're still pushing radical left ideology. They're still trying to paint Donald. I mean, I was reading an article this morning where, okay, the reality is that Donald Trump is going to go down along the likes of George Washington and Abraham Lincoln as one of the greatest American presidents of all time, assuming that he's able to accomplish as much in the second term as he did in his first, and assuming that he does exactly what he's promised he's going to do, which is exactly what he did in terms of fulfilling promises in his first administration. So I fully expect all that. But he is a man that is beloved by the American people. The American people love Donald Trump because for the first time in maybe American history, certainly in our lives, we have a president who's willing to stand up to the fake news, to the swamp in D.C., to everything else. And so the it really is morning in America today, and the American people are happy. We're in a celebratory mood. We're all excited. We see the dawn of a golden age. We see a new era coming forth of American prosperity and freedom and liberty and the restoration of American civil rights and human rights and a move away from the corruption and lies of the Democrats. That's what we're all so happy about. And then you pick up the mainstream media and, oh, this is a dark, dark, divisive day when a criminal takes office and is going to weaponize this, all of this stuff. And, you know, reminding everybody about, you know, a couple of the people that had committed crimes on January 6, 2021 and trying to, you know, say that basically Trump is a violent terrorist from January 6, 2021. When Trump didn't do anything wrong on January 6th, and he never told anybody to attack police officers. He never told anybody to be violent. In fact, he said the opposite. But no, I mean, it really is something else to see the media. Of course, I get a little bit of pleasure out of thinking about how disconnected the media is from the regular people of America when they're putting out stories like this, and they expected the people of America to view Donald Trump the way they view Donald Trump, which is he should be. They honestly thought Trump would be locked up in prison and a fully disgraced former president with, you know, 5% approval. That's the world these Democrats thought that we would be living in. But guess what? We're not. We're going to go to former Senator John Brendan in Scobie. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, David. How are you doing?
Good, you?
Well, it's 20 below here at Scobie, Montana today. But the reason I'm calling in is because exactly 40 years ago today, I was state chairman of the Republican Party, and I was in Washington, D.C. for that inauguration when everything got canceled, and I think it was even colder then than it is even now in Washington, D.C. So I just thought, I don't know where the last 40 years went.
Yeah, no kidding, right? I was talking to somebody last night. They said, wow, I can't believe Biden's presidency is already over. That went fast.
Well, it didn't go fast enough for me. But anyway, be that as it may, I'll tell you what, I was staying with at Congressman Marlaney's condo in Alexandria, Virginia. Everything got canceled. And then there were all kinds of different parties that were pushed inside and what have you. And so tickets were kind of a mess and everything. And I'm all by myself. I'm kind of feeling kind of lonely and despondent because I'm up in the bleachers where it was hard to see down on the floor until I looked around, and behind me, several seats behind me, were several governors and United States senators. So all of a sudden, I didn't feel so badly.
That's funny. You know what? I hate to have to admit this, but I went to Bill Clinton's inauguration in 96 as part of a school trip.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, everybody should go to inauguration, it's an experience. It's part of a history. It's also part of our great country and of democracy.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, maybe we'll all have another chance to go to an inauguration in 2029 for a hopefully newly elected president-elect J.D. Vance. Wouldn't that be something?
Well, let's hope it continues along that way. We just have to wish that President Trump will have a very successful presidency, not just personally, but for the whole country, and that we can be America number one again and have a unified country and work together, because that's the only way we stand together, we stand.
Yeah.
We diversify, and that's how we lose the farm.
Amen. Amen to that. Well, what a special call. Thank you, former Senator John Brendan, for calling in and giving us a little historical perspective.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. We're colder here in Montana than they are in D.C. And how many of you folks got to move work inside for the day? Current senator, brand new senator Tim Sheehy was on the Sean Ryan podcast. Aaron Flint put up some stories on Montana Talks about it. You got to check it out. Go to the Montana Talks app or the website and check out some of these articles. But Senator Tim Sheehy made a fantastic point, because boy, does he look like the young guy in the Senate right now, being 39 years old with the baby face, clean shaven, and he looks so young. But you know what he said? The United States was not founded by 65-year-old bureaucrats. You know what? It was actually founded mostly by men in their 20s. So good on Senator Sheehy doing a great job. Got some more quotes from him and Aaron Flint up next.
This is where Montana talks ag with Lane Nordlund.
On this inauguration day, we see that President-elect Donald Trump has named undersecretary nominees to lead USDA. Trump last week announced he will nominate Richard Fordyce as Agriculture Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation, and Dudley Hoskins as Undersecretary for Marketing and Regulatory Programs, along with Luke Lindberg as Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Ag Affairs, and Michael Boren as Undersecretary for Natural Resources and Environment. Fordyce is a fourth-generation soy, corn, and beef cattle farmer who served as the administrator of the Farm Service Agency during Trump's first term and former Missouri Director of Agriculture. During Trump's first term, Lindberg served as Chief of Staff and Chief Strategy Officer at the Export-Import Bank. He currently is the President and CEO of South Dakota Trade. Boren is a businessman who has founded six companies, including Clearwater Analytics, with Hoskins currently serving as legal counsel to the Senate Ag Committee. Previously, he spent 4 years at USDA during Trump's first term as the Chief of Staff for Marketing and Regulatory Programs. In other news, USDA has announced 2025 enrollment periods for key safety net programs, including ag-risk coverage, price loss coverage, and dairy margin coverage. ARC and PLC applications can be submitted between January 21st and April 15, with DMC running from January 29th to March 31st. I'm Lane Nordlund.
This is where Montana talks. Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We're live, and we got open phones, 294-0970, and luckily, Aaron Flint, live from Washington, D.C. Aaron, what's the update now?
Hey, David, man, incredible to chat with you. Yeah, that's so cool. I'm on Capitol Hill right now, Senator Steve Daines' office. Every nook and cranny of his office is filled. A lot of the Montanans that had tickets for the inauguration ceremony that was going to be outdoors, Senator Daines and his team has been gracious to host a whole, you know, dozens of these folks here in his office. So his office is packed full of people. There's people sitting on the floors. Vice President J.D. Vance is walking in now. You can hear people cheering maybe in the background. Every nook and cranny, like I said, is filled. They brought coffee, donuts. Everybody's in from the cold here with a big watch party on Capitol Hill in the Hart Senate office building. And, of course, man, I don't know if you've been able to watch a little bit of this ceremony while you're on the air, but hearing that opera singer Macchio. I mean, I had a Marine Corps veteran from Big Fork standing next to me that was getting misty-eyed like the rest of it for sure.
Yeah, no, I was talking to Caden this morning. I was like, hey, if this swearing-in ceremony starts while we're still on the air, can we do a join in progress? And then I looked at the schedule, and it didn't look like the swearing-in ceremony is going to start until about noon Eastern, which is 10 a.m. here. So we might be done by the time you get sworn in.
Yeah, I think his official swearing in is supposed to start here in about 20 minutes. But, you know, all the pomp and circumstance, all of the previous presidents are in the room, and then Joe Biden, Kamala Harris just walked in, J.D. Vance walking in right now as we speak, and so, yeah, but, and then eventually President Donald J. Trump, he was already spotted on camera in the hallway to the Capitol. First off, let me say big thank you to Yellowstone Family Dental, Montana's premier dental implant center. People travel from all over the Northwest to get their dental implants from Yellowstone Family Dental. They're making all this coverage happen, both today's show and then tomorrow's show live from Congressman Zinke's office on Capitol Hill. So go to MontanaDentalImplants.com. But, yeah, David, it was fun. You know, I told you earlier I ran into Montana Governor Greg Gianforte right in front of the Fox News and NBC News Washington bureaus. And so he and his wife, First Lady Susan Gianforte, are in the Capitol for this ceremony right now as we speak.
Yeah, so I don't know if you've been able to pay attention to Twitter at all, but I saw going kind of virus on Twitter here this morning is a picture of Capitol One Arena, and President Donald J. Trump has set up in Capitol Capitol One Arena a signing desk, leading to speculation that is Donald Trump going to sit down at the signing desk in Capitol One Arena and start signing executive orders in front of the crowd. I don't know if you've heard anything about that, and I guess kind of what are your plans? Are you going to try to get over to the arena or what?
You know, I had wanted to go to the arena, maybe get some media credentials, but everything got changed up so much at the last minute. But, you know, to be honest, I'm kind of excited to what might also be taking place here on Capitol Hill. Because, as I understand it, this Republican-led Senate is ready to get to work right away on getting President Trump's team in place. So I'm excited to be up here to see the work starting to take place right after the ceremony's over. That would be incredible. I did see one Montanan made it indoors to the Capitol One Arena. I sent out a photo from Stacey's Inn. Stacey's Inn is volunteering at Capitol One Arena. And so I said, hey, if you see some Montanans, snap a photo. So I'm sharing a bunch of photos if you go to x.com/Aaron Flint. But there's a ton of great Montanans up here at Senator Daines' office right now. Captain Kent O'Donnell from the Yellowstone County Sheriff's Office, always good to see. That great American patriot, Montana stock growers, Turk Stovall, he's down the hallway. Just so many great. Chris Engett with Concerned Veterans for America, Montana. Gillette Vira, Gillette and her husband, Justin. I mean, just people from all across. I mentioned friends from Big Fork that are here, so cool.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Well, we got a lot of stuff going on in the Montana legislature while you're out there in D.C. We've got Representative Lucas I think Representative Lucas Schubert on the phone up next here, Aaron. So I'll give you, I guess, any parting words here before we kind of move along and get back to some of this Montana stuff, and then we'll hear from you live tomorrow.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, thanks for manning the fort back there. I'm going to have a lot of coverage on our Montana Talks website later today when I get back to my computer with updates from the Hill, photographs, and much more. And again, thanks to Yellowstone Family Dental. Go to MontanaDentalImplants.com for our inauguration coverage. And then tomorrow, I'm live from Congressman Ryan Zinke's office. So, David, thanks for manning the fort.
Yeah, thank you, Aaron. Really appreciate the call. And by the way, folks, I do encourage everybody to be listening to the show right now. You're not missing anything. 10 a.m., though, when the show ends, you may want to tune into the Trump swearing-in ceremony. And then give me a couple hours here, and then I'm going to be at home. I'm going to be live streaming the rest of the inauguration per day ceremonies and everything else live on my Twitch channel and my YouTube channel. So if you want to find me and watch the festivities and the celebrations and Trump's address in Capital One Arena with my commentary over the top, you're going to want to enjoy that. We've got Lucas and Helena. I'm assuming that's Representative Schubert. Is that right?
That is right. Yep. Just calling in. Had don't have an A committee today this morning. We're taking it off, letting the staffers get some time off. But, just calling in. Wanted to talk about some of this legislation that's coming up. Personally, I have a bill coming up tomorrow. It's actually pretty controversial, seemingly, mostly from out-of-staters, though, interestingly enough, that this bill here is going to require there to be a year-round unlimited quota wolf season as long as the population is over 600. Basically, you know, when they got reintroduced, the wolves, the population was supposed to be around 450, and they said that if it was more than that, then there would be chronic livestock deprivation, basically. And now I'm getting a lot of these environmentalists coming in, you know, criticizing the bill. And most of them are from out of state. It's interesting. You know, I've received at least two emails so far where the first thing that they write is as an out-of-state or as a non-Montana resident, something
wow.
like that.
Wow. And, yeah, because they don't have to live with the crazy wolf packs taking out their property and animals.
Yeah, well, and they basically just said, listen, we visit, we come here and are tourists and like to see wolves. You know, that's what it was. It's exactly. They don't have to live with them. They don't have
Meanwhile, most Montanans are like, hey, can you guys just make it so the wolves are basically just like gophers and we can just kind of like go out and just shoot them whenever? I think that's what you'll probably hear from a lot of Montanans.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, and that's the thing is, you know, we exactly right that we have to deal with the chronic livestock degradation. And we also have to deal with the, our deer and elk populations. You know, we're allowed to hunt them. You know, there's increase in hunters. And then when you have wolves this overpopulated, those populations aren't going to be doing so hot. So, yeah, no, it's that's one thing I got coming up. But in terms of just the legislature overall, we also have a lot of stuff about the judiciary. I think this upcoming bill, SB 42, it is, I believe, Daniel Embrich's bill on the judiciary, that is going to be one of, if not the most important bill.
Is that the partisan judicial elections, or which one was that?
Correct. Yeah. And the thing is with this is that there are multiple different types of bills that they're trying to run on this. This is the strongest, though, because there's going to be a huge difference on whether or not the judicial candidates go through a real primary or if it ends up being a top two primary, kind of similar to what CI 126, which we luckily defeated, was trying to do.
Well, that would be, a lot more interesting if the legislature could also tighten up our primary systems. Because Lucas, Representative Schubert, out here in the Eastern Congressional District, we had mostly Democrats voting in our congressional primary because they recognized that no Democrat could ever win this Eastern Congressional District. And so all the Democrats voted in our Republican primary. And so I'd like to frankly see the legislature tighten up our primary so you don't have Democrats voting in the Republican primary. Have you seen any discussion about that?
Well, I have seen that Teresa Manzella, Senator Manzella, has a bill to do just that, to have closed primaries.
Oh, good.
So hopefully we can get that through. But considering the chaos in the Senate, I don't know if that's possible. I don't know if we have the votes.
The other thing I really like about that one, Representative Schubert, is the fact that I think that one is pretty clearly going to pass Montana constitutional muster, at least from the fact that so many other states have already done it. My worry is that some of these judicial reform bills, you know, they may be great, great bills, but if they just, you know, if they get thrown out again by the courts, you know, how much have we really gained there? But that partisan judicial elections one, I think that one will stand, and that I think that would have a big impact on our courts.
Yeah, 100%. You know, if people are actually able to know where their judges stand, then that's going to be a huge difference in a conservative shift on the judiciary, because Montana is a conservative state.
Right.
And it's only through these opaque, non-transparent elections that liberals are able to hold on to power.
Representative Schubert, we had a listener, Kat in Eastern Montana. She specifically wants to know some more information about that anti-Catholic bill. I think you posted about on X. If you could hang with us, I'd ask you about that in a second.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
We're talking to Representative Schubert about what's going on up there in Helena. In the meantime, President Joe Biden just issued a full and unconditional pardon for his entire family. Jim Biden, Valerie Biden, the whole Biden family, even CNN is saying this is extraordinary, unprecedented. Scott Jennings said what we're all thinking, which is, wow, these Bidens really are gangsters. For President Biden to issue full and unconditional pardons for every member of the Biden crime family. We can never elect Democrats again, because all they do is go on crime sprees. And then with ten minutes left in President Biden's presidency, and he just pardoned the entire Biden crime family. Well, Representative Schubert, we were talking about what's going on in Helena up there. One of our listeners had noticed your post about that bill. I think the bill is basically trying to make it so if somebody goes to confessional and confesses, that now instead of respecting, you know, the religious rights and religious freedoms of people, now some Democrats are trying to make it so priests would have to report that. Is that right?
Yes. So basically, the bill would require a priest, or I mean, really any religious, minister that deals with confessions. You know, I'm Catholic, so I'm familiar with how it works in our religion. But yeah, it would require them if someone were to confess the sin to the priest, to have the priest report that to the cops, depending on what it was. And so something like that, you know, completely flies in the face of the First Amendment. And I believe that other states have already attempted this, other Democrat states, and I don't think it really turned out that well. But yeah, I mean, it's an attack on the Catholic faith that these Democrats are trying to do, I mean, pretty much that, you know, it's pretty clear cut that we got to kill this bill. So I'm going to be against it, I'd assume it's probably going to die because the Judiciary Committee is pretty conservative. But yeah, it's terrible. You know, I mean, that's the thing in the Catholic faith. The priest has a duty under mortal sin to not share any information that he gained through confession, because really when you're going into confession, you're talking with God. The priest is just there as a judge to determine whether or not you're sincere or not. But really it comes down to, you know, you are talking to God, asking for forgiveness. And, you know, I think that, you know, that's where real Christian mercy comes into play, because you have liberals that take it too far and they say that we shouldn't punish any crime ever. But, you know, I think the real Christian mercy comes into play where you're saying, listen, we need forgiveness for our sins, because ultimately, you know, what happens on our last day, you know, when we die, that's the only thing that really matters in our life.
I think that's a great point. I think, first of all, a couple of thoughts. Number one, that has to be unconstitutional. So it's pretty rich for the Democrats to be, you know, crying about the legislature passing what they think are unconstitutional laws when they're putting out something like that. Number two, though, is since when do the Democrats care about crime? It's like, let's look at this for what it really is. This is an attack on religion. This is an attack on Christians. I'm so sick of Democrats. Suddenly, when they see an opportunity to go after the Christians, when they see an opportunity to go after the church, oh yeah, they'll pretend to be tough on crime and they'll even pretend to be fiscal conservatives and wanting to cut spending. But why is it that every time they bring up something like that, it's always an issue they've never cared about before, and the attack is always against Christians? It's just so obvious what they're doing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and then the other thing, too, is when they say, oh, we need separation of church and state, when you say that we shouldn't...
But then they want the police going into the confessional box.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. It comes down to it is they're playing to win. You know, they're on the wrong side, but they're playing to win. You know, they don't really care if they're seen as hypocrites, and they just go out there and just spew nonsense all day long. So,
well, hey, I've only got a minute.
It is what it is.
Only got a minute or two left here, I guess. Can you give us something positive on your way out, something you're excited about seeing potentially get through?
Like I said, I think the judicial reform, I think personally I have some bills related to cost of housing, just reducing the government burden on constructing new homes.
Awesome.
Property tax legislation, and I got one prohibiting illegal aliens from working, basically. So that'll be good to dissuade them from being in our state. Although with Trump in place, hopefully they just, you know, get the feds come in, take them all out anyway. So.
No, that's a great point. Well, thank you so much, Representative Schubert. Appreciate the legislative update here during the 9 o'clock. And you're right. You're right. You know, if we have a President Trump that can actually take care of some of these things, that does take a lot of the pressure off of Montana in terms of having to deal with all the ramifications of that. One thing I saw here this morning that was like, that's a great idea, thank goodness, is that the Trump administration is planning to put in rules that make it so that if you are deported from the United States, you can never come back to the United States for 10 years or 20 years. Which is good, because that could create an incentive for people to say, hey, I'm just going to go back to my home country voluntarily because I want to try to come in legally instead of getting deported and then being banned for 10 years. Just common sense stuff out of the Trump administration. Love to see it. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for the calls. My name's David Noble. I've been guest hosting for Aaron Flint. It's been an honor and a privilege.